Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, you out there, we have a great show for you today. I have in our studio William Ramsey. He is an investigative journalist, an author, a documentarian, and the host of what is becoming one of my favorite podcasts on the net, which, interestingly enough, is one of the top 1% podcasts in the world, I think. In the world, William?
0.5%, yeah. It just moved up into 0.5%. So I'm in the top. That's 15,000 podcasts.
See, that's incredible. That's awesome. We're excited to have him here. And interesting enough, I wanted to share this with you. We have a mutual friend. We're part of the Fringe Radio Network, and Johnny McMahon wanted me to tell you hello. Sure.
Hey, Johnny.
I have a question he wanted me to ask you, but I'm going to wait till the end to get to that.
That was one of my first interviews. It was with Johnny. It was episode 20 of The Iron Show, so
yeah,
the infamous marker.
So. Yeah. He's become a pretty good friend. We've been texting, and he knew I was interviewing you today, and he's like, ask him about this.
He and I have been friends for 12 years, so we've been friends for a while.
Yeah, yeah. He's a great guy. He is fringy and rough, but, you know, so am I, so I appreciate that. So, all right, I'm going to let my partner here start us off with the questions. We have, and I just want to go where the Holy Spirit leads, where, you know, whatever hole we need to go down, because we're both Christians, and we're trying to look at this from a, you know, Christian perspective. And I know that you're not a materialist, that you're a supernaturalist, like I guess we would be, and a Christian. And so it's going to be a pretty easy conversation, I think, to have. So, Lindsay, go after it.
Well, I guess we better start with the man, I guess, so to speak. I mean, all the rabbit trails we could go down with the various topics you cover, they all seem to loop back around to Mr. Crowley. So I guess my first question is, what got you on the trail of Aleister Crowley?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange thing. I was always kind of a fringe researcher. I kind of lost faith in the corporate media in the 90s, so I was always trying to figure things out myself by reading alternate websites and trying to put things together. So when 9/11 happened, once I realized there was a lot of problems with that, I was researching that independently online and just kept seeing these numbers 11. There was this guy, his name was Captain May, who wrote an article with all these 11s. He just noticed a super preponderance, over preponderance of this number popping up. And I was like, oh yeah, he's right. This number is popping up all the time. So it was just during my research and then looking in the common culture and seeing the 93 number pop up in 77, I was like, oh yeah, these somebody's putting something out into the, you know, psychosphere with these numbers. So I really tried to figure out what it was. And then I don't know where I figured out the 11, but I realized that 11 was a very important number in the Western esoteric tradition, which led me to Crowley. So then I figured out Crowley, and then I figured out Crowley was also writing things with 77 and 93 and 175. So that was kind of like, once I realized that there was a darker aspect to the events of 9/11 taking place on 11, right, September 11th, I really wanted to research Crowley. So that's how I got on to Crowley. I had a very superficial understanding of Crowley and magic with a K in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really wanted to find out everything about him that I could from original documents. So I read a lot of biographies. I read his biography, which is called Confessions, which he called a hagiography, like
well, Augustine and
St. It's the opposite of that. But he does tell a lot of honest. I mean, he divulges a lot of things about himself and his activities and where he was. I think he finished that when he was like 45, so it's not a total complete autobiography. But he thought of himself as important enough to put that together. It's like 500 pages or something. So I read all that stuff, and then I just read his old diary. I really looked at Crowley. I wasn't trying to glean anything from the occult rituals or I was really trying to look at him as a cultural and historical figure, and that's really kind of what led me to realize that a lot of his ideas overlap with kind of what people call the New World Order, and what is happened on 9/11. Really, kind of this movement towards global control. And the movement of power, kind of the social hierarchy to the top of the pyramid, so to speak. So, and which is still happening today. I mean, this whole WEF. Mm-hmm. So, I think that Crowley, as an elitist, Crowley as an occultist, I think his ideas overlap. If not, some people are copying his ideas in the kind of very dark global world, dark world order that we are entering into, if not already in.
Well, and also Crowley, the secret agent man. I mean, that's a whole nother dimension to it. Well, what I'd like to ask you, because I want people to read your books. I mean, that's you know, you guys out there, you need to read these books. They're awesome. But can you give us like just a brief overview of Crowley himself?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Prophet of Evil, now it's on its third edition. When I first put it out in 2010, I was printing it out. I don't know if anybody has any old copies of my original book, please take a photocopy and send it to me, because I was literally printing the book out and selling it with a plastic binder. But it's on its third edition. It looks a little bit more presentable. But Crowley was born in 1875. He died in 1947. He was 72. He was the only child from a wealthy family. His parents were both part of what was called the Plymouth Brethren. They were influenced very heavily by Darby, the dispensationalist. But they were actually a subset. They thought they were kind of set apart from the Plymouth Brethren. They were part of a subset called the Exclusive Brethren. So they were
actually
very
kind of cultic themselves. I mean, you know, he was cultic. Yeah. You could make an argument for
that's
that.
That's a whole nother edition. I mean, we can get into the depth of Darby and stuff, and how dispensational, what he was like. I mean, some people have done research on him, and he's a curious character. But so Crowley was the privilege. His dad, his family money came from brewing. You can look up Crowley beer, and you can see some of the bottles and labels that his family was associated with. They also sold food and things like that through the kind of pub system, you know, the vibrant pub system in England. So he never had to work. His parents were well off. His father died when he was 12, and his dad was a pamphleteer. You can actually see some of his pamphleteers. So he'd go out and evangelize for the faith. But Crowley really liked his dad. He always said positive things. So then he was left in the care of his mother and uncle, which he didn't like. He was sent off to private schools. Very vicious, late 19th century, what we would call private school in the States. They'd be public schools. But he was beaten and harassed into the, you know, bullied to the point of his life. Like, he almost died. So they took him out and they, you know, they said, hey, you should do mountain climbing or get some kind of athletic endeavors. He was trained by tutors and made the passed the entrance exam to get into Cambridge University, very prestigious. He said that he wanted to be one of the glories of the future. And he was with a really, you know, very important people, went to school there, the king and, you know, other luminaries. So although he said that he was surrounded by a more or less prosperous set of parasites while he was there. So, yeah, so he rejected, turned his back on Christianity. He said he wanted to become the chief of staff of the devil. And that was really the turning point, like in his early 20s, where he set off. And he said he was white hot on three subjects: poetry, mountain climbing, and esotericism or the occult. So he began traveling the world. He's kind of a hard person to pin down. He wasn't in one place at one time for very long. He circumnavigated the world or the earth twice at that time, which was very unusual. Kind of at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century. He actually passed through like San Francisco a week before the famed 1906 earthquake. So he was like in strange places at strange times his whole life. So that kind of ties into his intelligence background. He probably was an intel agent from when he left Cambridge. Nobody really knows the original contact he made. At least I don't. Maybe somebody else does. But he was always in strange places at strange times. There were very big happenings in the Russian Empire in 1904, 1905. And he was there taking this kind of group called the Ragtime Girls through there, which is where he kind of learned a lot of stuff about Orthodox Christianity, which he integrated into his religion that he called Thelema. But really his occult stuff, he was always writing poetry. His poetry isn't really recognized. He wrote all reams of poetry. He's kind of recognized as a C-level poet. But he mountain climbed in Switzerland, two times in India, in Mexico. So he was doing that all the while, but he'd be traveling and studying the occult and writing books on the occult and accruing information about the occult. He joined the Golden Dawn with William Butler Yeats was in there. They had a kind of a squabble. He made promises not to divulge any of their secrets. Once he left, he divulged their secrets and then got sued. So there's a kind of a famous lawsuit between Crowley and Mathers. So it's kind of an indicator of Crowley's attitude later on in life. But the most important thing that happened to him, he said in his life, happened in 1904 on a return trip from India, passing through Cairo, Egypt, where his girlfriend or wife at the time, Kelly, she said, they're waiting for you. And what it was somebody was going to dictate to him this book, this kind of received, communicated book. He said there was a being over his shoulder. He called it Awaz, A-I-W-A-Z. Called him the Lord of the Air, kind of has a biblical reference. Familiar with that? So that dictated, I think it was April 10th, 11th, and 12th of 1904. And that became the Book of the Law, which kind of became a central piece of his religion. And in that, it's, you know, you see the number 11, it says number 11 are for those of us. So it's kind of like an internal code that's drafted into this. And he created proofs, according to him, that indicate that the book itself was written by what he would call a preternatural entity. And he spent the rest of his life kind of praying to Awaz, this being who he later reveals in Magic and Theory and Practice in a footnote that is Lucifer or the devil of this earth. You know, basically admits that, and you can read that in my book, Prophet of Evil. So that 1904, then he kind of comes to the United States. He meets a lot of different people on the way. Comes to the United States probably as a spy. I mean, most 100% assurance that he's a spy, but he's playing like he's sympathetic to the German cause and the Irish cause. And like he tears up. These are all in the New York Times too. So like he goes out into Hudson Bay and tears up his passport and claims allegiance to the Irish nationalist cause, which was a big issue at that time. And then supposedly he's writing pro-German propaganda with these two magazines called The International and Fatherland. So and then he says his work is done. He actually showed up in the United States on the Lusitania, right? So then once, it's acknowledged that both World War I and World War II, the UK was always trying to get the US on their side and elbow out any German influence in the US. And so he said when he was done, like once the US came into the war, World War I, with the Allies, his work was done and he left. He went back to England. And then he went to Sicily and started something he called the Abbey of Thelema, which was kind of supposed to be a magical kind of monastery. He was kicked out by Mussolini in 23. Then he ends up in France. He gets kicked out of France. Then he ends up in Weimar, Germany at the strangest time, all the way to the advent or rise of Hitler. And then leaves there and comes home. He's a junkie. He's a drug addict. He has asthma. He's always trying to kick the habit. He uses all kinds of ether and cocaine, and you know he's using mushrooms. So he, at the last parts of his life, he's heavily addicted. But he really never gave up on the magical worldview, and died in a kind of upper scale nursing home, retirement home in Hastings, at the south of the UK, or like on the coastal UK. So that was 1947. I think really what people reference it to him and why he's an important figure in modern occultism, Satanism, is because he wrote so much that people can learn about, and he has these rituals that people can practice that supposedly give you power or whatever you want, you know, any worldly wish that you want, he's supposed to be able to use these rituals to grant them to you. So I think that that's, he's really the most accomplished or comprehensive aggregator of occult knowledge of both East and West. So he always integrated into his stuff yoga and Hinduism and Chinese mysticism and the I Ching. So I think the promise of kind of like his total freedom view is, you know, you're not encumbered by God. You are a God, and you can take drugs and have as much licentious behavior as you want. And those are all integrated into the rituals, and really what he kind of added to things after the Golden Dawn was at the use of drugs and sex and rituals, ritual magic type stuff. So I think that that's kind of it. And that's why the modern magicians, modern artists, people in Hollywood are attracted to this, you know, what Crowley offers to people.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, it's just hedonism 101. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you were talking about, obviously, since he was a revelator of a lot of the esoteric traditions and stuff, he put it all out there, but he coded it, though, so it wouldn't be correct. Easy. So what was the significance between the number 11 as it relates to Crowley?
Well, I think it has a lot of meanings in the old esoteric tradition, even before Crowley. So in the Golden Dawn, and I include some of the old references in the Golden Dawn, it's always been a malevolent number, but it is the coming together of the five and the six, the hexagram and the pentagram, which symbolize the macrocosm and the microcosm. So it's really kind of a magical number. Mm-hmm. But like I said earlier, it's like comes into the Book of the Law and also some of his other dictums, like do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, 11 syllables, 11 letters. So it's just part of his whole kind of outlook.
And it's everywhere. I mean,
it's everywhere. So you can see it in the modern culture. It's in Harry Potter. Harry Potter's wand is 11 inches. Tyler Durden. You can see it over and over again that it's integrated by these guys.
Sandy and I just got finished watching Stranger Things this week, with season 4. And I was on the third season, and I finally realized her name is 11.
11, right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that those guys, when they formulated Stranger Things, they had listened to my things, because they put in there, even in the first season, they put so much stuff from my talks. They have like literal symbols of the West Memphis 3 with the bikes, and one of the kids' name is Byers. Like, it cannot be random.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then they have a smiley face at the end,
at the
end of episode 8 on the first season. Like, why is that there? And then the Demogorgon is mentioned in Prophet of Evil as one of the 77 names of Satan. So, like, I don't think it's a synchronicity. I think they've done a little bit of homework. I watched it. So.
Yeah, my family gets annoyed by me because the predictive programming, I see it everywhere, and I see patterns. I mean, it's just crazy. Maybe it's some of my autism. I don't know. But it is
interesting because if you look at the most recent season 4, like, I've been talking within the last couple of years about this whole idea of portals and the gods under the water, under the ONA, and what do they do? Like, in one of the sequences of that episode, they swim under the water and find a portal. Like, yep. I find that maybe it's a synchronicity, but I think maybe they might be listening, so I don't know.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Yep.
So, William, who would you say comes closest to the Crowley, Aleister Crowley of today?
There's a lot around. There's a lot of these Crowley. Some people, they're passing away, but they've all carried on the tradition of Crowley, whether it's Genesis P. Orridge, who died within the last couple of years, But I would say, like, I studied Damian Eccles, and he's even just, somebody sent mm-hmm. me a picture of him. He's involved in the West Memphis Three. And there's just tons of occultism suffuses that entire event in his life and the people surrounded him. But somebody sent me a screenshot of him talking on some subject, and there in the background is a picture of Aleister Crowley. And he's published and put out tons of statements by Crowley on his social media and things that reference Crowley 11s, 93s, the whole bit. So I think he's part of that kind of new occult religion.
Well, and
he really didn't exist before Crowley.
Go ahead, Lizzie.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I just thought it was interesting, the trial, just from what I've seen of it, I don't know much about him, but then he tells you pretty important details about him. I mean, it's just...
Right, but here's the interesting thing. He said on the trial, he said, did you know anything about the cult? I don't remember verbatim what he said, but he said, I know everything about the cult. And he said that when he was 18. But really what got me interested in the West Memphis Three is I had just gotten completed with my Aleister Crowley, and I was researching my book, Children of the Beast, and I came across a video where and I had watched Paradise Lost from 96. I had watched that, you know, 10 years ago. And I'd heard they'd gotten out of jail. And I just assumed it was a technicality, but I was watching this video, and the prosecutor asked him, What do you know about Aleister Crowley? And I just said, what? This was involved in this case? I had no idea. And what it was, what they were bringing up is that in between his arrest and the trial, he was writing this cryptogram that had Aleister Crowley's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the court records. You can see it. And that's what the prosecutor was referencing. And on the table of the prosecutor is a copy of Magic and Theory and Practice. So they were on to him back then and when the trial in 1994. So... I think that he's really kind of, he's gelled around himself all kinds of occultists.
Well, that's what I was about to say. It's fascinating to me. I've been tracking back one of his number one fans. I mean, he has many, but one of his number one fans is Johnny Depp, who is of the Viper Room fame with River Phoenix, ODN, and all that. And it's almost like when I was growing up, I grew up Baptist, and there was this book called The Trail of Blood, where it basically, this book followed the Baptist faith throughout all of church history, you know, how there was always a representative of the Baptist faith or whatever. But I see this through the occult stuff, going back to the, you know, further back to Crowley and stuff like that. But in America, through the 30s and 40s from Operation Paperclip down, and it just fascinates me that the intelligence community is so intertwined with the occult. It just,
Oh, yeah, no question.
It blows me away, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is that kind of nexus with the occult and intel going back to John Dee and some of these other guys, whether it's masonry, things like that, with different variants of the occult. Crowley was post-Masonic, but
yeah,
the intel connections, there's absolutely no question about that. I mean, if you look at Skull and Bones as a perfect example, they were formative members of CIA. I think that, like, when... There's an infamous picture of Truman signing the National Security Act, and like four of the guys behind him are all Bonesmen. They must just go back and holler and hoot it up. Like, that's why they want those pictures, is so they can go back to the tomb and laugh about these guys signing these documents that benefit them. I mean, the CIA's history is incredible. It's really incredible.
Yeah. It really blows me away.
Unbelievable. But yeah, Depp, I mean, we can go into Depp's occultism. Most of all of his movies are occult. He is a fellow traveler. I didn't know at the time when I studied him 10 years ago, but I think I can pretty much safely say he's a fellow traveler with Eccles, and is probably one of his biggest benefactors, him and Peter Jackson.
Lord of the Rings.
Fan.
Yeah.
Wow. My understanding is they bankrolled. He was kind of languishing in jail, but he got a lot of these celebrities to help him out, and these rich celebrities, and got really a superb appellate lawyer, this guy Reardon, who worked for Barry Bonds, I think, and put pressure on the system and just, you know, slowly grinded them down, and then the judge left, the original Judge Bennett left, and then the original DA left, so they got new blood, and they just said, hey, you know, you guys, there's no DNA, and they kept doing this kind of CSI effect kind of nonsense. And it really convinced the public. They really, I think, that the majority of the public after some time, after all the PR, believed that they were innocent.
So, yeah, I was a part of, I used to think, oh, they just...
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. They wore black and they listened to death metal, so...
They had good PR. They had good, you know, phraseology. They had the hope from a crime they didn't commit.
Mm-hmm.
They wore black. They were outsiders. This was a very religious right-wing town, you know, so a lot of people like key into these. They're probably all tested in, you know, public relations firms or test groups or stuff like that. So they had it down, man. So, and I think that's really how they raised money. They raised $10 to $20 million.
Wow. That's
an incredible sum, yeah. It's never been accounted, never been in a public accounting for that.
Mm. Wow. Well, I mean, you even see it. We were talking about Stranger Things earlier. I mean, I don't mean to keep going back to that. It's fresh on my mind. But you even see it in the character Eddie, where he really was innocent, but the whole town did the satanic panic. And he was, of course, the you know, and they're trying to push the whole dynamic that just because you wear a jean jacket and play Dungeons and Dragons that, you know, you could still be innocent. And I just saw a hat tip to the West Memphis 3 in that season. Yeah. You know?
There's no question about it. They actually modeled that character on Eccles. So it's overt. It's not even like something they denied.
Yeah.
Well, the last season of True Detective kind of played with that too.
The imagery was all there. The kids, the bikes, them disappearing, not being found. Rural, going through the forest, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. What's the future of the case? I know you're a facts guy and not an opinion guy, but I want to ask your opinion. Do you think it'll ever be resolved? Is there even a possibility for it to be resolved?
I think it got resolved. They said they were guilty in 2011. They signed with the best attorneys with full knowledge. There's no real good constitutional claims done. They signed on the line that was dotted. That there was enough evidence to convict them of first-degree murder in a court of law. They signed it and got out, period. That's really the legal thing. Not the court of public opinion, but if they took that to another court, a functioning court these days, you got to ask real questions about that, a non-communistic, infiltrated court that actually operates under the principles and precepts of the American legal system, it's binding. They signed it. They had the best attorneys. They each had their own attorneys. You can see them sign it, like Reardon sitting behind them. They did it with full conscience. They got out. So it's already resolved. What isn't resolved is the public mind and people getting mind controlled and mind raped by West Memphis 3 propaganda.
Makes me think, and I'm sorry, Lindsay, I just want to ask this one question real quick. It makes me think, you know, since I'm more of a supernaturalist and all that kind of stuff, if ritual magic could have been involved in the possibility of him getting out,
absolutely,
he
has some
heavy hitters behind him,
probably doing rituals and spells and
all
kinds of stuff.
Yep.
I mean, they used all the techniques: behavioral modification, behavioral influence, Milgram experiment, things that people think. Like most people will just go along. If three people think a thing, the fourth will just say, "Yep, that line is smaller than the other one. You got it, boss." Just to not ruffle feathers. That is the default setting for humanity, sadly.
And that happens in juries all the time, you know.
Businesses, everything, families.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, William, give us kind of a brief rundown on the Order of the Nine Angles and how it connects to Crowley and Freemasonry.
Well, the Order of Nine Angles was kind of an offshoot of cult groups that was formulated late 70s, early 80s in the UK. It was formulated by a guy by the name of David Myatt, who was a frustrated farthest right, literal National Socialist, like not just name-calling National Socialist, but a real kind of National Socialist outlook. They did not have a lot of popularity in the UK. I think they could only get 10 or 11% of the vote. And so his kind of default or whatever was to get involved in occultism and kind of promote his ideas through that. So the Order of Nine Angles was an intent. That very intelligent guy. This is pre-internet. But he also absorbed a lot of Crowley. He was affiliated by his own admission in an OTO group in London. Mm-hmm. He was in communication and correspondence with people like Michael Aquino, the Temple of Set. They met him and knew him. So he was kind of playing off. And I think that he felt that some of these other occult groups and occult leaders were kind of play acting and not really being as authentic to the precepts of Luciferianism or Satanism as he saw. So that's why they focused, it's a smaller group probably, focused on killing people, offering people, or human sacrifice. So you can see that in my book. There's these letters of Stephen Brown. Like, he had multiple pseudonyms, much like Crowley, actually. So he had multiple pseudonyms, wrote a bunch of different things, but the ONA is really kind of a modern...
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing, and now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun, Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A modern expression of esotericism or occultism, and it really blossomed during the internet. A lot of people got involved internationally, and it kind of grew. And there were these Nexians, which are very similar to kind of like intelligence or dissident cell, kind of a communist cell or something like that. So they have these Nexians all over the world. And I think that their simple precept of being more evil than the other guy is like what distinguishes them from Crowley. Crowley talked about, I mean, I just put up something called Human Sacrifice, Crowley and Human Sacrifice on Twitter. People, I mean, I actually have that on my website, but people went berserk. They didn't understand that Crowley had written about human sacrifice. It was just not as overt as the ONA. So the ONA has different things. They have kind of a different pantheon. They have 21 dark gods. You're supposed to engage in vampirism, nighttime stuff. And it has kind of a different culture or ideology than the OTO. But you're really supposed to get possessed. Like, you're supposed to get possessed at night and then become unpossessed and take on the countenance of some of these dark gods. Mm-hmm. And it goes all the way up to today. Like, they just had this guy who I wrote about in my book, Global Death Cult. His name was Brandon Clint Russell. He just got arrested February 3rd. 20 days ago, 3 weeks ago, for allegedly trying to blow up the entire electrical infrastructure of Baltimore with the intent to kind of destroy the city.
Wow.
And his girlfriend, their girlfriend was Glenn Daniel. Her screen name was Nythra, N-Y-T-H-R-A, which is one of the 21 dark gods from the Order of Nine Angles. So it's around. It's around. So this is absorbed and it kind of morphed into occulted National Socialism, and it's part of the Atom Waffen, and there's been deaths associated with it. There's been people stabbing people, slitting people's throats, killing people in parks in London and Toronto. So it's very strange, but it's very much part of the current modern system of internet communications and travel. Yeah.
Well, when I think of ONA, I don't know. I just think pop culture. I think of the whole movie Fight Club, and it just seems like it's kind of, and it was probably even before the ONA was real big, but it seems kind of modeled after ONA. What do you think
right.
about that?
Well, no, you make that good point. That's good. It's 1999 when that movie came out, right? Tons of smiley yep. faces in that movie.
Yep, yep.
It's yep. It's like you're possessing Tyler Durden's 11 letters, smiley face at the ending. I mean, it's incredible. And it actually kind of predicts kind of 9/11. Go watch the last scene of Spy Club, because the last two Twin Towers are what followed there, followed 1999. It's incredible.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I think the book, when was the book? 1996. So it was right out kind of with, look into Palahniuk too. He's a very interesting character. But yeah, huh. When does the book get written? Yeah, 1996.
Wow.
Yeah, no, and it's monastic. You're invited in. It's an underground group. There's all yeah. kinds of like super society stuff.
Yeah, super secret, you know. I mean,
can't talk most about
of the
it, right?
most of the secret societies are not so secret societies. I mean, you can find out too much about them, you know, but this one's very elusive, it seems like to me.
So go read the book, cuz the movie doesn't emphasize it as much, but the book talks about human sacrifice. So the soap is a symbol of human sacrifice. When you see that picture,
yeah.
It's all about the reason they're making soap is because the Irish druids would burn these bodies, and then the fat would come out.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So it's a direct yeah. reference to human sacrifice.
The fat and the lye from the ashes joined, it would form suds or something like that. And,
yeah, it's a direct reference to human sacrifice.
Yeah.
But that also ties in to the whole druidic fact, and that leads to another question that I have of the smiley face killers, because druidic, the West Memphis... What was it, Memphis 3 guys threw the bodies of those 8-year-olds in water, and that's a druidic type rite, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
I did a really good show with Christopher Knowles of The Secret Sun Speaks. I think we did a show about his research into druidism, and I think he kind of expanded the understanding of what was going on, because I had come across that in researching the West Memphis 3. They used to walk around with staves, kind of like they were Gandalf or something.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how deep it went. And I think Order of Nine Angles has a significant, double helix. Well, one of the helixes of the double helix is druidism. So it's all going back into the forest and rituals and important locations and things like that. So, yeah, it's there. There's no question.
Mm.
So it's like a neo-paganism, like it's the rebirth of a paganistic worldview, right? So
well, and I wonder how much that has to do with my son, who's 20. I'm taking him down the rabbit hole with me. He has noticed a massive influx of Norse mythology and Norse stuff on the internet. You know, have you heard anything about that? Do you know what's going on with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Order of Nine Angles, they were very, like, Corleed had no problems. He didn't have as much of a distaste for including Jewish Kabbalic ideas into his kind of thing. But the ONA is not like that. So they reject anything Nazarene or Jewish, right? So that's kind of like the enemy. So they, instead of having the Kabbalah, they have the Tree of Word, but spelled W-Y-R-D. And so you're supposed to kind of progress up this Tree of Word, which is kind of synonymous with fate. You'll see that I did a show called The Word is the Word. You can see that on my Rockman channel. But going into how predominant this kind of concept is and bleeds over into metal bands and European culture and Norse culture. So I think that you're seeing, as kind of the church's influence recedes, these kind of new groups, like the neo-paganist cell, the neo-paganist kind of mini cell is a real thing. It's not a joke. But these kind of different ideas that are not, they're out there. They're in the United States. There's one really creepy one in Virginia. These kind of, Nordic kind of groups.
Worshipping the whole pantheon. Yeah. I mean, Odin and Thor and all of them. Yeah. The
tattoos, you know, all that stuff. So we're entering into a different kind of very variegated kind of mindscape where it's not all uniform. You have people with just really different ideas and very sophisticated. Some of these guys who are in these groups, like I had a conversation, like I know people have researched some people from the ONA and they have this idea of shrenching where you're not supposed to be overt. You're not supposed to be obvious. So if you saw, you know, Michael Aquino or Crowley with the bald head or LaVey, you go, these guys are, you know, look like they're on the occult, but the ONA encourages you to look like the normal like a normal person, which is really a much different thing. So if you were at a bar, and the women are involved too. So some of these women are, you would, they could be like at in Beverly Hills, you know, in a nice designer dress, honestly. And some of the men you would think were like just athletic guys, because athleticism is part of the training for the ONA too. You're supposed to bike a lot of ways or hike or do something. So it's a much different, like, yeah, the commonly held notions of what is an occultist or a Satanist, those old notions, yeah.
Well, that kind of leads.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
I was just going to say it leads me to the next question. I mean, this idea that these so-called far-right groups, I mean, do you think they're kind of flying under the radar because we're so focused on the far left right now? And
I think to a certain extent. I think that governments around the world are becoming more tuned to them. They're more aware. I don't think that they've been around that long, honestly. So I think it's a new kind of event within the last two decades with the advent of the internet. But they're starting to ban. Australia banned, I think it was Feuerkrieg or Sonnenkrieg division. So if you are part of that group, you get a 10-year automatic sentence. You go to jail for 10 years. And I think the UK did that too. The US in Congress there's been letters bandied about by congressmen or senators about the dangers of the Order of Nine Angles. So I think that the awareness is getting heightened in certain places, at least in law enforcement. But I think that when Adam Waffen was doing their kind of huge swatting things, like they swatted like 200 people, they swatted Trump's head of the Department of Homeland Security. So they were very ambitious, but a lot of those guys got wrapped up and went to jail. Mm-hmm. So I think, and to me, I mean, just, I'm not in law enforcement. I don't have any law enforcement connections. I've never given information other than what's in my book, but it seems like they knew that this guy, Brandon Clint Russell, was going to probably do something else. And they got him before something bad happened. So they probably are aware of some of these guys. So I would say that within law enforcement, like the FBI or something, they're probably aware that, well, I forgot what there's a new kind of acronym for them. It's like radical ethnically influenced groups or something. I forgot the name.
Damn.
So I think it's there. I mean, I don't know. I think it's something that's happened fairly new. These are kind of newer ideas, so maybe they're harder for people. And that's kind of why I wrote the book. It's like there were a bunch of deaths in 20 before the pandemic. People were shooting people's parents and shooting their friends and stuff.
So, well, I framed it in a left-right thing, but I mean, the whole left-right thing really breaks down with groups like that. All and even Nazism to a great degree just doesn't fit our left-right paradigm very well. It's, I think Nazis really were socialists, you know?
Yeah, they were socialists. They were no joke. I mean, if you joined the National Socialist Party, you got all these benefits. You got, like, free house. You had enough kids. You got benefits. So that doesn't fit in with the normal capitalist system. I think they were really just a race-based political party.
Yeah.
So all the benefit for us and everybody else gets nothing. Or gets kicked out or thrown into the concentration camp.
Yeah. Socialism for the right people.
Yeah, socialism for the right people. Which, you know, that's not much different than communism. If you don't say the right thing, you get the concentration. You get the gulag. I mean, there's already gulag treatment right now. I mean, this current regime has put people into jails without their constitutional rights. So these people do not, I mean, at the very top, the fish rots at the head. They do not really, I mean, it's really a shame too, because I think Biden has a law degree. He knows that these people are entitled to a speedy trial, but they're not getting it. They're not getting even a fair treatment. And their civil rights are being impeded. I think a lot of people's civil rights, actually, I mean, I think the Civil Rights Act that was put together after the Civil War actually applies to a lot of the censorship that's going on, because I think it's coming from the government. The tech companies are just following orders that come down from the administration, which should scare the living daylights out of everybody. But they don't seem to, they seem to be kind of just numb. They don't get it.
Mm.
Yes, there's a real compartmentalization, which is important, you know, in the whole government system. It seems like that it when the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
I agree so, with that, for sure.
Yeah. So talk to us about the smiley face killings. I'm super interested in this because I saw on another true crime YouTube that kind of just touched the surface of it. But
yeah, I mean, it comes out of, it was put together, was the name was given by two guys. One was Gilbertson, who was a criminologist, I think, in Wisconsin. The other one was Gannon, who was a police officer in New York City. And it's really the phenomenon of young men going out at night, later to be found in water. And they correlated this kind of picture of the smiley face with these deaths. So it was really kind of a mystery. It's an urban myth. It's been covered on Coast to Coast. It started kind of in the mid-90s, kind of with the advent of the internet. And it's really a mystery, but it's gone on. Like, I've done two documentaries now. I've covered about 120 or 140 cases of these disappearances.
And later, yeah, I can't find your documentaries. I went looking for them. Where are they, on Rumble? Yeah,
Vimeo,
or
Vimeo. You can just go to Vimeo William Ramsey. You can actually see my first one on, it's still on Amazon, but it probably didn't mean, I probably kicked off every search engine on Earth.
Yeah.
I've been censored so bad. Like, I've had 3 YouTube channels taken away.
The bane of telling the truth, William.
Yes, I'll take it as a badge of honor. But so this phenomenon still going on. You can go watch or listen to Jim Smith, Smiley Face Cult, because the death count's restarting now, the pandemic kind of over. Nobody's really buying the hype anymore. So Chicago's a hot spot. Austin, these urban centers seems to be where it happens most. But some are really obviously foul play. Like, people are disappearing for 40 days. They're disappearing for 3 weeks. And very unusual. Like, especially after, I mean, the pattern is the same. Young man disappears. Massive family gets panicked, massive police response, search party, flyers go up all around town, police, local news follow the story. Nobody finds anything. 3 weeks later, body shows up. And some are really obvious, you know, like I said, they're obviously some misadventure going on. One is guy in Shane, I can't remember his last name, but he was in Manayunk, Pennsylvania. And there was this very like little stream that was probably 2 or 3 feet deep. And he was last seen by it. So the police and everybody got out and searched for him. They found his car keys. They didn't find him. Where does he show up 3 weeks later? In that same spot where they found his car keys. So they could find his car keys, but they couldn't find his body. So somebody's doing something funny.
What amazes me is how are they keeping the bodies from not, you know, rotting or right. I mean,
they're,
I mean,
not,
they must
dead.
Be kept, they're not,
yeah,
dead.
They're not,
yeah,
dead.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
The original cases, I think it was Case Studies in Forensic Drownings by Gilbertson and Gannon. They found one of the bodies still had ice, so it had been frozen. Ooh. So really dark, heavy dark stuff. And, there's one case I covered in my second documentary about a killer who just got convicted. He ate the guy's testicles, but his name was Latunsky, and he was on like the male dating apps. The guy who he abducted and killed is very easy to remember because his name is Kevin Bacon, like the actor.
Yeah. And, I remember hearing about there, that.
Kevin Bacon, actually, the real actor, to his credit, got involved and said, "Hey, it's not me. Somebody help find this guy." And I criticize cops sometimes, but these cops who were in Michigan did a great job. I don't know how they keyed into it, but they went and talked to this guy, Latunsky, somehow got him to agree to let him look around. And he said, sure. And they said, you want to go down the basement? Sure, let's go down the basement. And they found a fake wall, and in there was a dungeon, and there was the body of Kevin Bacon hanging upside down. So to their credit, they busted, and that's just the one body. Like, I don't know how many times that guy was involved in others. naughty stuff or evil stuff, you know. But, you know, it's like Dahmer, you know. How many people were you actually doing that to? So there's probably a couple, you know, 20, 30 serial killers out there.
So but, do you think there's a connection between the ONA and the smiley face killers?
I think the ideology would explain what's going on with the smiley face killers. I couldn't find anything. I mean, I think the ONA has used smiley faces in certain contexts. So, but yeah. I don't have the evidence. All the evidence I have is in my books. I could speculate all day.
Yeah, yeah.
But it would apply for motivation. Like, why is somebody doing this? And if you look at the kind of ideology of the ONA, it's like, they're selecting people they deem not to, like, they have an animus towards Christians. They have an animus towards certain people or alcoholics or something like that, or don't have noble characteristics. And maybe that would explain why certain people are getting the smiley face killings treatment. I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But the whole idea for them is, like, if you look at the smiley face, look at the Order of Nine Angles, they have this kind of 300-year plan. They're trying to create this imperium. And they're trying to formulate aeonic change, much like Crowley.
So since we get kind of back on the ONA real quick, the founder of the ONA briefly converted to Islam. Do you think that was sincere, or do you think that was just another angle there of him?
I think it was sincere, because if you look at radical Islam or just radical Nazism, the whole kind of philosophy isn't that much different. They want to accelerate the end, kill off the enemies, or kill off whatever. What would be the heathen under for Islam, and put up their own kind of their own political structure. So I think for him, I mean, if you look at the ONA doctrines of, like, insight roles and accelerationism and doing all this stuff, I don't think it was just another shape shifting attempt, but in the furtherance of whatever their aims were, chaotic aims.
Well, in your book, The Global Death Cult, do you go into detail a lot? I haven't gotten that one yet. That's the only one of your books that I'll have. You go into more detail about the ONA and all their idiosyncrasies and
stuff? The Global Death Cult goes in. I mean, it goes chapter by chapter. So I just go through and talk about Myatt, and then I talk about their ideas, talk about the earlier ideology. I talk about their pamphlets with, you know, when they're communicating with Michael Aquino. And then that's kind of the foundation of what leads into these acts of people who are influenced by them, whether their names are Meltzer or von Nudegem or some of these other Suter, these other characters or Daniel Hussein. You can read all these people who have tried to, you know, do things based upon, you know, ONA ideas, which is commit crimes and not get caught, right?
Right.
Because there's a lot of people getting caught. So that's kind of why I wrote the book. It's like, this is happening in the common culture. And I think it's filling the space that has been receded by a lot of things, really. The nuclear family, you know, people who are dislocated due to the internet because they're on the internet all the time. And I think that there are people out there who are looking for vulnerable people. A lot of these guys are on some kind of spectrum. So there are sinister people looking for young, impressionable people. They probably always have, right? To kind of propagate their ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at Myatt too. Like, Myatt was associated, like, they go through different, you know, they're still the same internally, but they have different name changes. So Adam Waffen officially is dead, and I think now it's called American Socialist something. But back in the UK, Myatt was associated with a guy who was the London nail bomber who carried out three really vicious nail bombing things at bars, which is also an interesting target. But like, he targeted gays, immigrants, and maybe blacks, I forgot, but like, it caused havoc. Like, there were nails in babies' heads and, like, just horrible stuff. Wow. People got their legs blown off. Very much associated and unrepentant. His name was David Copeland, was his name. But he was associated with stuff that Myatt was involved in. So it's the furtherance of that kind of chaos and things like that. It's real. So I would expect that, I mean, some of these other infrastructural attacks, I wouldn't be surprised. They have a far right connection. Some of the ones that haven't been caught, whether it's North Carolina or Washington, because that's what guys like Brandon Clinton Russell were advocating before his arrest in 2017, and then it seems like after his release from prison in 2021.
So do you think that ONA goes up the echelon, up to the elites, or?
I don't know. Yeah. I never had any evidence of that. You know, I just had the younger people. So I don't know. There may be guys like that who are into these doctrines. It seems like it was the ONA was different from other occult groups in my mind, because they kind of allowed other people to kind of build off the corpus and add information. But I didn't really see any obvious elite kind of connections. Seems more egalitarian, but there may be. I just don't have evidence of that. I don't really. I mean, nobody would admit to it. You know, I don't think they would admit to being an ONA member.
Mm-hmm. Well, William, what's your view on Q and Anon? Some people say Q and Anon.
It's a sophisticated form of warfare and psychological operation, I think. I don't think they've really achieved anything. But they've got a bunch of people on their side. They can populate with ideas and keep them all kind of herded into a stockade. So they've never been right about anything, really, have they? I mean, some of that stuff is obviously... I mean, it's really a testing thing in psychology. If I can get you to the point where you can believe that John F. Kennedy Jr. is alive, I've got you. I own you. And I think that all those people who've done that, that's where they're at. It's kind of like Scientology. There is a god called Xenu on Tegeac, right? Yes, boss. I got you. Yeah. That's the treasure thing, whether it's moon alien bases on Mars or something like that. That's what they're doing. So a lot of these people aren't, they don't have enough background in these kind of like psychological operations to know what's happening to them. So get off of the QAnon and Q plantation as fast as you can.
Well, I've kind of, and Lindsay can testify to this, even when after Trump was elected a year or so, I just sensed and just kind of filled it and did some research, and I've just felt that there's always been like basically two cabals, two groups that are competing, and I think the white hats are just as, you know, perhaps devious as the quote black hats that Q talks about, and they just have a different agenda.
Right, they just want to keep you on their plantation and control you and send you down there. For Trump, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump was in on it, like putting out fake things and keeping you all paranoid and waiting for the... I mean, can you imagine like being like a little chicken waiting for the next Q drop? That's a huge industry. These are millions of people, millions of followers, money's being made, books are being sold. It's kind of like the UFO thing where nobody has any proof of anything. It's just like, oh, Joe saw a big light over the hill, you know? I don't have any actual tactile evidence. And it's, I mean, you want to talk about the spooks and kooks involved in UFO. Why aren't they there? I'm sure they're all over QAnon. There's other guys in there who are, have some very interesting backgrounds, man. It's always quote, former, unquote, right?
Yeah. Well, what scares me is there's tons of Christians that are involved in the whole Q plantation. And I just think that they're being deceived.
Definitely being deceived. I can say 100% assurance. Yep. I think the first Q drop was Hillary Clinton is going to be arrested.
Well, I heard that every week at some point.
Okay. Well, I mean, at a certain point, when do you realize that you're the dog and your owner has done the ball trick on you? At what point do you go,
That's a great analogy.
I mean, that's a want to believe. It's about epistemology. It's about your religion, how you coalesce among your friends. Some of these people know that adrenochrome, and not all these guys are full on pedophiles, although there are a lot of them are. But you know, it's preposterous. Some of the stuff. Come on.
Well, I guess it's getting about time to wrap up the show. I appreciate it so much, but I had the final question that Johnny wanted me to ask you. He asked about going for a Mars jump, going to the Mars jump room fighting dinosaurs with a spork.
that's Andrew Bisaggio, whatever. That's another like weird kind of mind control MK Ultra thing. Like, he's apparently a lawyer from Washington, but he thinks that there's some kind of, like, where I live, it's about 12 blocks from where I live, is supposedly a jump that Obama has taken to Mars and fought with dinosaurs are on Mars. Like, he literally has said that in public forum. So it's kind of like a recurring joke with me and Johnny that I'm going to go over there.
And the spork.
There's a coffee bean and tea leaf, like, right in that same complex. So I always say I'm going to go get a cup of coffee, a spork, and go to Mars and fight some dinosaurs. And that's QAnon territory. Yeah,
yeah, man. Territory. I love it. So well, look, we appreciate it, your time, and I know how valuable it is, and we've enjoyed the show. And
good.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. It was fun.
So, thanks for having me.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.